From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. A powerhouse in California and national politics is stepping down. Former House Speaker and longtime San Francisco Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi announced last week she will not seek re-election. Pelosi has been a figure in Congress since she was first elected in 1987 and is one of the most powerful women in modern politics. But speculation about her future has swirled for months, as some within the Democratic Party have called for a change in leadership, and Pelosi herself was facing challengers for the upcoming primary. But with her impending retirement, who is stepping in to try and fill her shoes amid big challenges on the national stage? Joining us now with more is Dustin Gardner, co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Welcome back, Dustin.
Hey, Vicky. Good to be back with you.
So leading up to Pelosi's announcement that she would not seek re-election, what did speculation look like behind the scenes in the days or even weeks leading up to this announcement?
This question has been the subject of parlor chatter in San Francisco for years, really, at this point. I mean, this is the third election cycle where we thought Nancy Pelosi might retire. And this one, it felt a little bit different. There were certain things she wasn't doing. You know, she hadn't announced earlier. She said that she was going to make a big announcement after Election Day and after the passage of Proposition 50. And so there were some tea leaves sort of suggesting that she was thinking about this. But Pelosi is really famous for keeping her cards close to the vest. She has an ability to do that few other people have in politics. And this was such a closely guarded secret that she actually recorded two versions of the announcement video, the retirement announcement. And one of them, of course, said that she was going to retire, is the one that she ultimately published. And the other one would have said that she was going to stay in politics and, alluding to her running for another term. And that just shows you, you know, that just really outside of a handful of people, I've heard less than 10 people of her closest advisors and family members knew that this was happening. And so really, you know, up until her last big career announcement, Nancy Pelosi, it remained the ultimate tactician, someone that's able to keep big secrets and keep her cards close.
Okay, so there were two videos. One was, hey, I'm staying in this. The other, of course, I'm stepping down and retiring. That kind of almost seems like it came down to the wire.
That's really what she wanted to project, the idea that things were up in the air. And part of that was about preserving her political clout. I mean, Nancy Pelosi raised tens of millions of dollars in support of Proposition 50, and she wanted to maintain that power and that leverage to help the party pull off, you know, what is a big win and could add five new seats for Democrats. But what I have heard behind the scenes is actually her mind was made up this past summer, as early as midsummer, or if not much earlier than that, she had decided that this was it. And really for no other reason than I've been told by advisors that she's just ready. You know, at age 85, after nearly 40 years in the House, she felt like she's ready to pass the baton. But all that said, yes, she kept everyone really guessing up until the last minute.
Yeah, nearly 40 years. That is a long journey. Remind us of some of her biggest moments and accomplishments while in office over the decades.
The first that absolutely comes to mind is affordable health care. The Affordable Care Act, we worked with President Obama to pass by a very, very, very narrow margin in the House. And this is the reason that Pelosi, in a large part, didn't retire years earlier. She had talked about retiring some years ago, and she stayed to defend that landmark law against President Trump and, you know, different attacks from Republicans. That absolutely stands out. And then what also stands out for me is just how many things she's done for San Francisco. You look around town and so much of the infrastructure here, the Presidio National Park site by the Golden Gate Bridge. These are things that Nancy Pelosi brought. You know, she brought home the bacon from her hometown time and time again. And even things like AIDS and HIV treatment and research, she was central to the very early efforts in Congress to get that approved. A lot of the congressional acts to expand coverage for children's health insurance and expanding coverage for women's reproductive care. Nancy Pelosi was really at the center of a lot of those kitchen table type issues where Democrats had big wins in the last, you know, several decades.
In her final years in Congress, after stepping down as Speaker, where has she been the most effective? What is she known for accomplishing in her final years in Congress?
You know, after leaving leadership, she really pivoted to focusing on San Francisco more. She said recently that San Francisco gave her the leeway to be a national leader and even though she still did a lot of things focused on her district for a lot of years, she was involved elsewhere. And so we've seen her shift more to back to constituent work, but she certainly hasn't been done on the national stage. I mean, she has been at the center of Democrats' Save Our Care campaign, you know, the opposition to some of the Republican-led cuts to Medicaid. Also, she's been at the center of opposing Republican cuts to food stamps. And we also can't forget the last presidential campaign. She, behind the scenes, was one of the chief architects of the intra-party effort to convince President Joe Biden not to run for another term. You know, it's only about a year and a half ago that she and some of her top lieutenants worked behind the scenes to really, you know, kind of talk to Biden and put pressure on Biden after his really bad debate showing against President Trump. And she, you know, helped convince him to step down. And that really just speaks to the way that Nancy Pelosi has remained a chief strategist from her party for her party long after leaving leadership.
Yeah. Following that announcement, I mean, what kind of ripple effects have kind of spread out on the national stage? Who is talking about maybe stepping into that senior leadership role among California's congressional delegation?
I mean, I think there's a couple of obvious people. Pete Aguilar, the Democratic caucus chair, he is in recent years has, you know, really kind of moved in that direction in terms of taking over a lot of the fundraising and being a leader of the caucus in that way. Another person that comes to mind is Representative Zoe Lofgren from the San Jose area. She, you know, had been one of Pelosi's top lieutenants and is the dean, essentially, of the California delegation and chairs the delegation caucus. So those are two immediate people that I think will sort of fill that void. But I think a lot of people are looking around and saying, you know, there really is no one like Nancy Pelosi on a national level at this point. I mean, Hakeem Jeffries is still very early in his role as minority leader for the Democrats in the House. And there's been, you know, a fair amount of criticism from people feeling like he just, you know, hasn't quite filled Nancy Pelosi's shoes. And so I think a lot of people are questioning who really can fill her stilettos. And it's an open question whether there is a next Nancy Pelosi to be that ultimate strategist and tactician for Democrats.
Yeah. And we are rounding the corner to the primary, to the midterm next year. Who is looking to fill her seat, to run in her seat?
This is really looking to be one of the most competitive and expensive congressional races that San Francisco's had in a very long time. State Senator Scott Wiener actually jumped into the race about a month ago before Pelosi had even made her announcement. He was eager to get in there. And part of that is because there was another contender already in the mix, Shwoikat Chakrabarty, who's a wealthy former tech executive and former chief of staff to New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Chakrabarty, he started running about 10 months ago, and Wiener saw him getting momentum. And because he is very wealthy, Chakrabarty can self-fund, and he's poured almost $1 million into his own campaign. So that sort of lit a fire under Scott Wiener. Another name that had been in the mix is Christine Pelosi, the congresswoman's daughter and a prominent attorney and party organizer. But Christine announced this morning that she's not going to run for her mother's seat, and instead she's going to run for the state Senate seat held by Scott Wiener. So that takes one person out of the mix. But there's a whole list of other prominent names in San Francisco that are floating out there. Mayor London Breed told me on Friday, the former Mayor London Breed told me that she's thinking about running, which would, you know, really shake up the race. Other names that have been floated out there are Jane Kim, the former supervisor. We're even hearing the name of Matt Haney, the state assembly member. He's thinking about potentially doing it, according to some of his advisors and allies. So really, it's just quite a long list at this point.
Do you think Pelosi will make an endorsement?
I think she will, but I don't think it's coming right away. From what I've heard from her orbit is that she's really looking to see what the field ultimately looks like. And one of the names I did not just mention that I should is Connie Chan, who is currently a member of the Board of Supervisors. She's very closely aligned with progressives and the left in San Francisco, especially labor unions. And she's been seen by Nancy Pelosi's side at a number of recent campaign events. And so I think a lot of local political observers are looking at that and thinking, okay, Connie Chan and Nancy Pelosi seem to be very close. So we don't know what Pelosi's ultimately going to do, but since her daughter's out of the race and there is this closeness with Connie Chan and they have the shared labor union alliances, that seems to be the person that she's gravitating toward. But that's only if Connie runs, and so that, which remains to be seen.
Was it surprising to you, given, you know, how closely you follow this, that Pelosi's daughter opted for the state legislature versus Congress and her mother's seat?
You know, for a lot of years, myself and other people, political observers in town, had assumed that it was going to be a Scott Wiener, Christine Pelosi race. I mean, really, that is the contest a lot of people had been gearing up for. But there were indications that Christine Pelosi wasn't going to do it. And she had not really, you know, created the infrastructure or the foundation for a congressional type of campaign. There were things she would have needed to have done going back several months to set the stage for that. And she just wasn't doing those things. And so I frankly was not surprised that she pivoted to the state Senate. And especially in light of what I was just talking about, of Nancy Pelosi really sort of heaping attention on Connie Chan, this progressive up and coming younger supervisor. It seemed evident to me that there was a pivot happening and that something seemed to be in the works. Yeah.
Pelosi, of course, still has another year in office. After that, do you think she's going to retire, like, you know, relax and kick back? Or what do you think's next for her?
I don't think Nancy Pelosi is ever going to fully retire. So as much as myself and other reporters have said that this was a retirement announcement, it's really her saying she's not running for another term. But everyone I've spoken to, all her allies in labor, all her, you know, longtime advisors, everyone says that she will continue to be a force in the party. And she's one of the most prolific fundraisers that Democrats have ever had. And like I mentioned a minute ago, she raised tens of millions of dollars for Proposition 50. I mean, Nancy Pelosi, she's not lost her spark and her ability to, you know, help shape the direction of the party.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Politico's Dustin Gardner. Let's turn to other news in the last few minutes that we have. There was a deal reached last night between Republicans and eight Democratic caucus members, including both senators from Nevada, that could lead to the end of the government shutdown. What has the response to this been from California officials?
From California leaders, the response has been a lot of anger and frustration. You know, we saw Gavin Newsom tweeting last night, you know, telling Senate Democrats not to bend the knee and really being very critical of Chuck Schumer and saying that this is sort of capitulating to the Trump administration when Democrats have not contracted, you know, any concessions on health insurance premiums. And that's really what this was all about. And so I think the frustration from California Democrats is towards Chuck Schumer in particular is very pointed. And it's such a contrast to Nancy Pelosi's leadership, where she very much kept her caucus in lockstep. And it was very much a focal point of the resistance to Donald Trump during his first administration in particular. With Chuck Schumer, California Democrats feel like, a lot of them feel like he's not towing the line and not holding up the resistance that they're hoping to see.
Yeah, as you reported in this morning's California Playbook, I mean, Newsom's office wrote on X, pathetic. This isn't a deal. It's a surrender. Don't bend the knee, with an exclamation point. Of course, this follows just 1 week after the passage, voters approved Proposition 50. What role and momentum is Governor Newsom building right now for overall the Democratic Party's direction nationally?
I don't think Gavin Newsom has ever been more popular nationally with the Democratic base. I mean, all the things he's doing with championing the passage of Proposition 50, which passed by a margin much larger than a lot of the polls even suggested, from that to, you know, the trolling and the combative tone he's taken on social media with the president, his popularity is just really surging with the Democratic base. And a lot of states have been sort of, a lot of blue states have been kind of hemming and hawing and moving more slowly than red states when it comes to these mid-decade redistricting maps. And California was out there fastest and, you know, the most aggressive Democratic plan. And so I think the base gives Newsom a lot of credit for that. And I think, you know, we're seeing quite a few polls showing that he's surged among the 2028 presidential field of potential candidates. And a lot of that is the base looking at him and seeing him as being more of a fighter than other contenders they've been thinking about.
And Proposition 50 was in response to the Texas legislature also redrawing and gerrymandering its own maps ahead of the midterms. And Governor Newsom was in the Lone Star State just over the weekend, right? Or a few days ago. What was the reception like?
I mean, yeah, to Texas Democrats, Governor Newsom is like this folk hero, it seems like, because really the Democrats in the legislature here, they in Texas, they You know, they really didn't have a comeback plan. And then it was just last summer in June when it was clear that Republicans were not going to back off their gerrymander. Newsom came up with this counter plan, and Texas Democrats started coming to California and doing campaign fundraisers and doing all these things to bolster Prop 50. So there's this very, it seems like there's this very unique relationship that's emerged between Governor Newsom and the Texas Democrats.
So since it's been almost a week since Prop 50 was approved by voters, what has the political maneuvering look like for these newly redrawn districts, given that, you know, the midterm and the primary is just several months away?
It's just been an absolute cascade of dominoes of people figuring out what seats they're going to run for. You know, we have these five new blue-leaning seats, and we're seeing a flood of candidates preparing to run for those seats. And then also we're seeing Republicans figuring out what they're going to do. And you have these incumbent Republicans that are losing their districts, and they're having to figure out what they're going to do next. For example, Ken Calvert down in the Riverside County area, he's decided that he's going to run against Young Kim from his own party for a safe red seat in Orange County. And then you have Kevin Kiley up in the Sacramento area debating which seat he's going to run for. And he hasn't, you know, quite exactly said what he's going to do yet. And there's even a question of whether he'll really have his party's support when he decides which seat he's going to run for. You have to remember Kevin Kiley was at odds with Republicans over this redistricting issue and really pushing his party to back off nationally, which did not happen, of course. So it's just been an absolute earthquake politically in terms of the shaping landscape. And I think there's a whole bunch of dominoes that are going to fall in the coming weeks. We're just seeing the beginning, because I think there's going to be more members of Congress, especially people from Pelosi's generation or part of Pelosi's circle, that are looking at retirement themselves. And then those seats will be opening. So I think we're going to have dozens more potentially candidate announcements in the coming weeks.
In the last 20 seconds or so that we have, I want to end with Senator Alex Padilla, because he announced on Election Day that he's not going to be running for governor next year. He's going to stay in the Senate. What stood out to you about this announcement? Was anything happening behind the scenes that potentially influenced this decision?
I think, you know, a lot of Democrats that were just really shocked. I mean, they were had really, especially people on the left, had been hoping he would get in. And this is especially in the wake of some of the viral videos that have shown Katie Porter's interactions with a reporter and with a staffer. And some of the, you know, the outbursts and behavior there, I think, has made people on the left that might have been with Katie Porter really start searching for who could be the alternative. And part of what was shocking about Alex Padilla's announcement is there's no one clearly coming to fill the void that for people on the left that aren't excited about Katie Porter. But, you know, Padilla is an institutionalist, and I think, you know, he likes the work that he's doing in the Senate, and the idea of leaving, you know, this safe Senate seat that he could probably hold for the rest of his life and entering a very bruising, expensive governor's race. I think that just ultimately was not appealing enough to go through all of it.
Dustin, as always, thanks for joining us. So much to get through.
Thanks for having me.
Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook, and we've been getting up to speed with the latest in California politics. Up next, calling all high school students, we'll learn about a new law which guarantees admission to Cal State campuses for upcoming California graduates. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.